but I also want this work to be a bit of an escape too, visually, where you can, because we need that too. We need beauty. We need to see things that can give us some kind of solace, some kind of place to sit and be quiet.
Hey everyone, this is Julie Wake from the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod. Welcome to Season 6 of the Creative Exchange Podcast. We continue our celebration of artists, arts leaders, and the brilliant minds shaping the creative landscape. From painters to performers, writers to visionaries, we delve into the diverse world of creativity to discover what it truly means to be an artist in today's dynamic and ever-evolving landscape. I hope you'll join me on this creative journey. And if you like these conversations, leave a rating or a review. Share with a friend. Help us shine a bright light on our creative corner of the world here on Cape Cod. We'd like to thank our sponsor, William Ravis Real Estate, as the official real estate company of the Arts Foundation. We'd like to thank our sponsors, the Cape Cod Melody Tent, the Kelly Foundation, the Woods Hole Foundation, and the Cape Cod Foundation. We couldn't do it without your support. We'd like to thank Bank 5 and the Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod. Thank you for supporting the arts. On today's episode of the Creative Exchange Podcast, we had the pleasure of visiting friend and talented artist, Sarah Deneen, in her home studio located in Brewster. Sarah welcomed us with hot coffee and blueberry coffee cake, setting the perfect ambiance for our creative exchange. In this conversation, we explore the fascinating evolution of Sarah's artistic journey. She began her career as a painter, but has since transitioned into the world of sculpting. We delve into how a single poem served as the catalyst for an entire series of work, a journey that is far from complete, continuously evolving and expanding. Join us as we take a deep dive into the world of this remarkable artist, Sarah Deneen, and gain insight into her creative process, her inspirations, and the never-ending evolution of her art. Enjoy. Welcome to Season 6, Sarah Deneen.
Thank you very much.
So this is the first time that we have actually been in an artist studio. We brought our gear to your studio. So thank you for having us.
You're
here.
Welcome.
Are we in Brewster?
We're in Brewster, yes.
Okay. So we're in the middle of nowhere on Cape Cod. A beautiful nowhere in the woods. It's very quiet. Is it a productive space?
It is a productive space. Yeah, it's so quiet. And the light in this room in particular is so perfect for most of the day. It's pretty amazing.
I love being here. It's really amazing, especially around all your work. So tell us a little bit, like, how do you describe yourself as an artist?
I guess I don't know why that is kind of a hard question. Because I've turned into making sculpture, mm-hmm. I think scale is the thing that I think about the most. I would say using the body to make these giant things is kind of the biggest thing for me. Making small paintings is very difficult. I try to do it because it's smart economically in many ways. But I would say I love scale. I love the materiality of paint and making things with the hands. It's really, really important to me. I don't think the digital era will ever affect me in terms of not wanting to make paintings and sculpture. I think it's just really important for me to have this physicality.
Mm. So you were a painter first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the painting itself is what led me to sculpture. I started making paintings of these very specific forms, and I started thinking, huh, these might make great three-dimensional items. So because of the pandemic, I had time to really explore that. It had been on my mind for a long time, and I had dabbled a little bit. I thought, no, I'm a painter. Uh-huh. But because of the pandemic, I just thought, okay, this is the time to really put some thought into it. And I also didn't know what materials I would use, because I thought, well, I don't know anything about wood, like carving or building stuff, but it just was a natural, I just figured out what would be most related to painting, and because I knew the sculpture would be painted sculpture. Mm. So I was able to get materials much more easily here than in New York City during the pandemic. And they were pretty inexpensive. So it made sense.
Compared to New York,
yeah. It was, the logistics there are always very challenging.
Interesting. So before we get into the body of work, I am curious, are you from Cape Cod?
I am. Yeah, okay. I grew up in Brewster. I'm in my hometown.
Ah. Yeah. Okay. And big family?
Not a big family. I had two younger brothers. Okay. I was the oldest. We grew up not far from here, like a mile and a half. It's so funny because when you grow up here, you just want to get out of here because it's so quiet. But I landed back here in the early 2000s and was here for a good 10 years after undergrad.
Okay.
North of Boston.
Nice.
Yeah.
And family supportive of your art?
Really, really supportive. Yeah, my mom was incredible. She also made paintings. I think she's the reason I got into making art. She always painted these little watercolor animals when we were growing up. And she basically taught me how to make stuff. When you're a kid in elementary school, you have to do these like book reports in middle school. And I always wanted to make some kind of cover like for the book report. So she taught me how to draw. So she would paint like half of it and then let me do a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And, so I got a lot of attention for having these great covers, and I was very, very shy. And so getting that kind of attention, was something that I really responded to. And so I would just ask her tons of questions about how to draw, how to make things look more real. And then as soon as I started getting into it, I would just be in my room for hours trying to figure out how to make things look real. And then as I got a little bit better, I would get attention, like on the bus, I would copy magazine covers and, you know, pictures of Johnny Depp and, you know, like famous people. It's like every kid that draws is trying to make a likeness. And so the kids would be like, oh, what did you draw yesterday? And so I'd be like so shy on the bus and bring a pad of paper and say, oh, well, I made this drawing, mostly Johnny Depp. and so that was it. Like, that's how I got into it. So super supportive. My mom was always like, you know, we're here, didn't have much money, but like that kind of moral support was so valuable all throughout all the years. And I always knew that art would be the thing that I wanted to do. So it was great. And my aunts and uncles are also like, they were huge supporters too. Yeah. The whole family was like, yes, they come to all the events, all the openings, all the graduations. So I'm super lucky.
Yeah.
Because I have many artist friends that didn't have any kind of support, and they still made art. And I'm just very lucky that I had that. I think it had a huge effect. And I don't know how. I guess if you are committed to your art, you're going to make it no matter what. But that made it easier to have.
I bet.
That. Yeah.
Now, I find it interesting. You mentioned you were shy.
Yeah. I still am too.
Yeah, I can see that. I always find it really interesting that when artists talk about their upbringing and they lean towards being kind of a little more shy or introverted, but the art was this sense of connection to others and a sense of belonging and where you fit in.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it is a way to connect if you don't have that personality or the language. I mean, I certainly am not I don't feel that I'm that articulate. So like, you have to be to a certain extent, but having pictures to share with people, I just, getting that physical reaction from someone was very, it just gives you information like, oh, okay, this is a way to connect, like you said, and a way to say stuff that maybe you just can't put into words.
Right.
You know?
And do you still do this? Is it still important? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. And abstraction is different, but in a way it's more freeing. It gives people more, more options in terms of meaning. You know, you can show someone a face, which we all, of course, that is wonderful to get to see a painting of a likeness. But abstraction, so there are a lot of question marks. It's like poetry. Mm-hmm. So I love poets so much because it's the same. I feel like it's the same place. It's this kind of openness where you have the freedom to determine what things mean. There's no right or wrong answer for me. Like, I don't care that, like, if you look at these shapes, it doesn't matter to me what you, I mean, it matters to me what you see, but it doesn't matter that you don't see what I see.
Right.
You know, I love that. I think that's so interesting because people come with their own experiences and it gives me information about how these are being seen, how they potentially could be seen. So I think that's, it's a more exciting for me in a way to have for abstraction as a way to connect.
That is interesting. I'm just taking it in and I'm actually looking at the work. I've been fascinated by your pieces and your paintings and your sculptures for years now. And you definitely have a theme.
Yes.
Since I've known you.
Yeah.
And I was actually reading some of the theme titles and protection, doorways, certain dark things. So tell me a little bit about, like, where is this coming from? What are they inspired by?
Well, certain dark things is from a poem by Pablo Neruda. It's from a line in one of his poems. It's Sonnet 17. And that poem is something I worked from for about 10 years. Just this piece of writing that I would just read it every time I came into the studio, and certain dark things could be anything, really. Within the process of making the paintings, this shape came to be. And to me, it's figurative, it's a head and a body, it's a tree, it's a microphone, which led me to our voices, how we can use our voices, who gets to be heard and who doesn't. But poetry was the first thing, and this kind of rhythm, the way poetry can kind of suggest things, that's how that body of work started. But then within that, doorways, headstones, to me, I started thinking of them as doorways. So that body of work, there are nine paintings in that doorways series. If you look at headstones, you can see this kind of shape, this curved shape on top with this kind of stone cement, bottom, and this idea of a little space of black,
yes.
This very flat, dark black, it just doesn't have any reflection at all as the space, like that you wonder what's in there. It could potentially open. There's this tension. And that got me thinking about architecture. So it all started with a poem. And then it's just neat how you just start with this one thing and it leads you into all these other interests. So architecture, the repetition of so much architecture. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm interested in the work, this repetition. crowds, standing. Other artists like Magdalena Abakanowicz, she made lots of work where there are crowds, figures just standing there, different kinds of meaning, but visually this idea of it stops you in your tracks when you see the same shape repeated in a big space.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really does. It makes you think of all kinds of things. And that tension with your the headstones is really interesting Because it's like, you don't know if I'm supposed to go in or is someone coming out.
I know. Yeah, this in and out, is it welcoming or not? There are all these tensions of they're kind of dark, creepy, but also they're kind of funny too. They're a little bit wonky. The drawing is a little, you know, it's all hand. There's no like stenciling or anything like that. So it's all like you can definitely see the hand in it. The other interest is the material. Mm. Architecture got me interested in that. Like, okay, how can I make this thing look like cement? How can I, but using painting to do that, that is endlessly fun to use paint to make something look real like that. And it goes back to my interest in figuration, like drawing people. If I can make a painting, I still think of them as sort of representational in that way. Like, oh, this looks like cement. This looks like clouds. This looks like whatever the thing is.
Yeah, there's this great texture to all of your paintings that I just want to like put my finger through it and taste it.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, it's a sensory thing.
Especially the ones in here.
Yeah, color, bright color, yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of the repetition and the movement between the two pieces. It's really, they look like microphones on top of each other, pouring, either going up or going down. I'm not sure.
Yeah. And there's this idea of like exchange,
yes.
Energy exchange, which is what we're doing right now with these.
With our microphones.
Yeah, like sound. I mean, I also took piano lessons. So like sheet music, notes, the graphic quality of sheet music is in here too. So all of these interests are embedded in the shapes, in the color choices.
So interesting. So, all right. So I have a question about the kind of the theme and the area in which like you're really interested in and as it relates to like what's going on in the world. Does that inform some of the work or is it just this internal dialogue or is it everything?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can't make anything without that stuff making its way in. And I love the idea of the materiality kind of holding all of that. Like all of that stuff is embedded within this. It's not ever going to be overt. I don't think I'm not that kind of artist. I'm not making political statements, but it's certainly in there. Mm-hmm. And the sculpture, I have to say, was started at the beginning of the pandemic. And all of this stuff about voices being crushed, voices being heard or not, that's what that started out as, being interested in, like all of the protests, like all of that makes its way in. And people can see that or not. That's not as important to me, but it's all in there. Like you can't not be concerned with all of this stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's so, you can feel it.
Good.
Yeah, you can feel it. And I love that it's not overt.
Yeah. I think there are artists that are really good at that and it's really important. But I also want this work to be a bit of an escape too visually, where you can, because we need that too. We need beauty. We need to see things that can give us some kind of solace, some kind of place to sit and be quiet, because you can't have it all the time. We can't be fighting all the time for everything that we need to happen. We can't, we're not capable.
Right.
So you need a place to rest. So for me, in the making of it, I work all of this stuff out in the making of it, for sure.
Wow. And what was it like over COVID? So you said you kind of started thinking more 3D.
Yeah. So I had been thinking of that for a while. Like the paintings were...
Oh, wait. Let me interrupt you.
Sure.
So first, tell us about... So you had or still working in New York City. Yeah. And you were there. The pandemic happened and then what?
Yeah, so I was part of the studio program at the Elizabeth Foundation for the Arts in Midtown Manhattan, and the program is so incredible. It provides subsidized studio space for artists in Manhattan, right in Midtown on 39th Street. So I was there through 2021. So 2020 hit, And that I will never, of course, none of us will ever forget that week that everything shut down. I was there I've been splitting time between New York and Cape Cod. I went to grad school in 2013 there. And then since then, I've been doing half and half time. So I was there to just clean out some of the paintings from the studio, like just bring a few back here just to make room for new work. And I had a U-Haul and things were starting to happen. I went to all the art fairs that week of whatever it was, March 15th or no,
yeah,
the first
13th.
Week. Right? Yeah, I think it was the week before that. Yeah, like the 11th, 12th. I was like, and so I had a sense that, oh, things are getting kind of sketchy. Maybe I'll be back on Cape Cod for a couple weeks. You know, took all that work with me, brought it back here. And then, of course, 3 days later, everything was done. So I was just here. I'm so lucky to have this little unfinished room to work in. So yeah. The first thing I did was I rolled out a giant painting, a 19-foot-long painting in the kitchen, and just started cutting it up. Because I had all of these ideas, these three-dimensional ideas. And it was kind of a crazy move because it was a painting that I called it my adolescent painting. It was this kind of awkward painting. It never really worked, but it had these very strong shapes in it. So I cut the shapes out. I just laid them all out on the floor. I mean, everything was weird. It was such a crazy time. And
yeah.
I don't know, I just felt like I was in a trance cutting this thing up in the kitchen. And I brought it all up into the studio. So I had these giant shapes and I just laid them out on the wall. That was when I was like, okay, three-dimensional stuff. What am I going to use? I need to do this. So I figured out what I was going to use. I bought sonotubes from one of the hardware stores, 12 footers, super cheap. You cut them in half. So I had 6 footers and I wanted to make this shape, the ball shape. To me, they were microphones. Like that was very important that they were microphones. So to figure out like the scale, I figured out that I could make a ball out of a cast exercise ball. So I use these like yoga exercise balls.
Yeah.
And I use this material called aqua resin. So it's fiber. It's like water-based fiberglass. So I wrapped it, used the fiberglass. It dries super fast. You just deflate the ball, pull it out, and then fiberglassed that to the sonotube. I had this whole process that I just developed as I went. There were a couple of fails, but eventually I was like, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And then I painted over that. But meanwhile, I was also making new paintings. It was very, very productive, but in this weird, like, scary way, like just so unnerving. But it felt like the perfect time to be brave in terms of like doing something new. And
yeah, I bet.
Because we all had so many thoughts about it. It was like a way to say something about this awful time. And I just felt like it was so important to do. So microphones. And then I live off of a dirt road and I had this idea that they should be trees too. Like how awesome it is because the dirt road is somewhere where I run. And so this idea of like walking through this set of trees what is the thing that's calming?
Trees,
trees, yeah. Their roots. It's such a great metaphor for, you know, all the storms, like everything. They're still standing most of the time. So I just started cranking those out and I just learned a ton. It's amazing what your work can teach you just about yourself, about the world. It was pretty powerful. So it took a year and a half to make all of them. I made 9.
What did you learn?
I just learned that you just need to follow the work. Like the work, my work, I feel like it's a few steps ahead of me at all times. It sounds kooky, but it really, I feel like it has answers in it. I never don't know what to do. I just look at the work and like really follow. I mean, obviously I'm making the decisions, but the work, it really is ahead. It's this strange kind of unconscious, powerful unconscious thing that if you're really watching it closely, it just gives you information and you can question. You're like, oh man, am I really going to make trees? Am I really going to do this? Am I really going to use all these exercise balls? Right. Am I really going to
like, have I lost my mind?
Yeah. It's weird. But you're like, I mean, how else are you going to do it? You just have to follow that. It's so neat. It's so, it's really kind of like an exercise in trust.
Like trusting yourself.
Trusting yourself.
In the process.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds so cliche, but that's really what it is. But I feel like that that way of operating can reach out into your life too. Like it's a way to really trust your instincts.
Absolutely.
in other places.
That's so interesting. I totally 100% agree. I know what you're talking about with that, like just standing in front of your work, and I could picture you being like, "What are you trying to tell me right now?"
I don't know. Yeah, and it's almost quieter than that. Like,
yeah,
it's just, I guess, all the repetition. I mean, it's hours and hours of painting these dots too, and you just do it. But then there are these moments where you kind of step outside yourself. You're like, "Wow, am I really spending 9 hours a day painting dots? this is it." But
it felt good.
That's what it takes. I mean, it takes that much time, especially when you're making things by hand. And there's just such power in this like eye hand coordination. It's like, I don't know, you just learn a ton with that. And I listen to a lot of things like music and podcasts, and they really get into your nervous system when you're making stuff.
Absolutely. I'm curious, what podcast do you listen to?
Let's see.
Besides Creative Exchange.
Chelsea Handler. I love humor.
Funny.
Humor is very important. Glennon Doyle.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. And then some of the NPR stuff, like, How I Made This.
I love that. How I Built This.
How I Built This.
Yeah. I love that one.
Yeah. And, Ezra Klein, I tend to go towards the ones that have more creative guests, like poets and all different ones. And my artist friends send me, and there's tons of art ones too, like career things. But yeah, all different stuff.
Yeah,
but
I'm always curious what people are listening to.
Yeah,
because I just love a good podcast. You really get sucked into it.
Me too.
Tell me, what do you want people to know about the life of a full-time working artist? Like, how do you, I'm really curious about your residency programs. Like, how does that, what's that look like in the scope of a year?
Well, residencies you have to apply for. So there are these cycles of applications that we're always applying for. Some of the bigger ones that are stipends are involved, where you don't have to pay anything. Those are the best, and they're very competitive. But residencies are so incredible. They're just it's so special to have that time away. It switches up your everyday visuals. You get to meet new artists. That's always incredible. I've met my closest friends at residencies. I mean, you have to have the freedom to be able to take, it's usually 4 to 5 weeks. So the ones that I've done, they've just been amazing experiences. My work has changed in all of them. I think just because you have that uninterrupted time, none of the daily stuff gets in your way. And I don't know, you just push yourself in different ways when you switch up your surroundings.
I was really curious about your time at MIT.
Oh, MIT, this is an incredible thing that happened. So the poem that I worked with for so long, I started snooping around. So I'm working from an English translation from the Spanish version.
Okay.
So I'm going by that, which is, of course, very different than the Spanish version, and I don't speak Spanish. So I looked for the person that translated it. His name is Stephen Tapscott. And he happens to be, I don't know if he's still there, but he happened to be a literature professor at MIT. And it's such a special story. So I've sent him an email. I just thought, you know what? I've been making this body of work for so long now. It would be nice to let this person know that I used their translation. Sent him an email, sent him a link to the work, had no sense that I would ever hear back. And he emailed me back and he said, "You know, this is incredible. Would you like to come and speak to my students?" And these are like engineering students at MIT, just taking a literature class. None of them are, you know, planning to go into literature, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. So I went in. Well, let's see. So first, did I meet him? No, I went in there first. And we had exchanged a bunch of emails about the work. And he just seemed to understand the work in such, like, the most accurate way, because he had spent so much time with the poem. He translated these 100 sonnets. If you buy that book, the Pablo Neruda's 100 sonnets, it's him. He translated all of them. And he said it took him a year to do. And I just couldn't believe. So I went in and spoke to the students. Had awesome questions because they're coming from a different place. They were like, what is abstraction? Like, what is this stuff? It was so good for me to answer those questions from people with, like, they didn't have much experience looking at art either. But Stephen understood it. I mean, there were things that he kind of picked up on in the work that I had thought about but never verbalized. He just knew from, like, he was talking about, like, cadence and rhythm and drums, and, like, live drumming is something I'm very much interested in. But I mean, I listen to that a lot too, like, just to get beats, like a feeling when you're kind of, like, losing energy in a piece of work, just get some kind of, like, beat going. So he had to do that. He said at one point in the process of translation, he felt like it wasn't going the way he wanted to. And so he went and saw some, like, very specific live music that had this certain beat, and it solved whatever was missing in the translation for him. So there were all these, like, really interesting kind of connections with that process. And it made me think more about translation and adaptation. The name of this class that he taught was Translation and Adaptation in Poetry. And so it turned out that he has a summer house 5 minutes from here Brewster. And when I started the series, like, he was here. He has his writing cabin, like, right on his same property. So he was, you know, he's a prolific poet on his own. He's a really good writer. So we stayed in touch for a bit. We've lost touch since, but it was so neat to have those conversations.
So you're talking about abstract art to a group of engineering students.
Yeah.
Why do you think that's important?
I just think it's important that other people, that you have dialogue with other people. It shouldn't just be artists. Like, I'm not making this work to just show other artists and other art people. It's really, it's more of a humanity question, I think, like a connection question, right? Like,
right.
And I think there's a, maybe outside of the art world, you know, there's a pressure to, like, oh, what am I looking at? I mean, I had someone actually ask me, what am I supposed to be seeing here? And I'm like, well,
did you love that? You,
I thought it was a really telling question. It was kind of like, well, what do you see? I mean, you have a sensibility of your own. You have things you've been through and seen. What is it that you see? And then if you get people to really say that out loud, they get nervous, but it's so important. It's so good. I think it's critical thinking in a way. It's a way to really, like, kind of challenge your own sensibilities. So it was neat. It was I really appreciated having to answer these
absolutely
these questions. It was good.
That is so interesting. I've been digging a lot into, like, what's the role of the artist in our community, in our government, in our systems, outside of the creative sector. So I want to ask you a question, maybe it will help inform some of my research. If I were going to offer you a government job.
You know, depends on what it is.
What department would interest you the most, like planning, urban development, transportation, housing, healthcare? Like, where do you think you could add the most value to troubleshooting, talking about, you know, humanity and the arts? Where do you think you could add some value? I know that's an unfair question. It's kind of a big, and we can talk it through.
Well, that is a big question. Well, I'm thinking more about the work. Like, what could the work do? Like, art is so missing from everything. Yes. Like, visually, like, it, think about places like Philly where you go and there are murals everywhere.
Right.
It stops people in their tracks. I mean, totally. I just think everything should have paint on it in, you know, yeah. painted by artists.
Yeah.
I think environments should be, first of all, it could employ artists. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this whole question of like housing, healthcare, all of it. Like artists cannot make a decent living doing what they're doing.
No.
A few can, but not many at all.
Right.
It's really horrific. It's not, our culture is not set up to support artists at all.
At all.
So in government, that's like the first thing I would change. Artists can make a wage.
Right.
A consistent wage, you know, like.
Absolutely. I was doing some research on this one artist who's a dancer. And she was working with the Department of Transportation in the city of Boston. And she is a dancer with a disability. And so she's a resident in the city of Boston. And she is helping to inform them that it's really a difficult city to move around in. So I found that so interesting, right? That like you have this artist. And she's a professional dancer, and she also runs a nonprofit for people with all abilities to dance. She started this nonprofit. And I just love the fact that she's in there saying, this is a really difficult place to move. I can't move well, but here's a city that I do move well in, and this is why.
Wow.
So I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah. I think artists are good with that. Because they can think there's innovation built into the sensibility in a way, like,
yeah,
because they're operating in a different, just in different ways, especially with dance. But it's so informative because it might be just a way to think outside the box in terms of solving problems.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just love the idea of the artist at the table.
Yeah.
In these discussions.
Too. Absolutely. It would be amazing. Plus it would be meaningful to be a part of something like that, to help with whatever the thing is. I feel like any of those sectors that you mentioned, it would be incredible to be a part of, of giving some kind of input or working.
Right. And back and forth too.
Yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
What you'd walk away with from learning that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot for
that
one.
Oh, no, that's great.
So what are you up to these days?
Well, I'm finishing this body of work. This started in March. This was all a way to brighten March up. March here is a very dark time. And it was a very basic question using all of my same kind of abstract language. I said, what would make things feel more uplifting around here? And it was blue skies and rainbows, very simple thought. So I was like, okay, how can I do that? Plus just adding a little more color into the work anyway, I was kind of leaning towards that because it's been more of a muted palette, kind of black and white, but more on the color scale. It was more in this kind of quiet, on this quiet side. So this was a way to amp things up. So I'm finishing this body of work, and sending it out, trying to like applying for things, trying to get it seen because I'm not making this for myself, but I'm making this to share with other people. So
it's amazing. And it looks like it's got a lot of story to tell.
Yeah.
You know, like I see these heads popping out of these colorful.
Yeah. And they're playful. I want them to feel playful and funny. They're strong, but they're also just, they're quiet. They're steady, I guess.
is that like, when I look at this, I see a keyhole.
Yeah, keyholes too. Like that's another thing that I've been thinking about with this shape, the thingness of it, and also with the way I paint it on some surfaces, I can make it a place.
Okay,
like a thing and a place, depending on the whatever medium I use. So on the other part of this body of work, this new body of work, was these little headstones that I made with actually the keyhole shape. So that's another idea that I'm thinking about,
okay.
medieval kind of old keyholes with giant keys. I haven't painted any keys, but I think that might be something I think about next, like unlocking.
Ooh.
It's another. But these are the things that your work kind of leads you to.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you have this interest that goes from one, like they all kind of relate to one another, like this protection.
Yeah. That was a huge body of work. That was something that I guess this work has always been about.
Uh-huh.
Kind of, I always think about what we reveal or conceal to each other. And I just the idea of protective coverings, both physical and metaphorically.
Yeah.
Like, so I had this idea to be very literal about it and paint a set of armor. So I made this whole body of work. It was shields, helmets, tubes. I don't know what I had this vision of, like an army. Like, what would the things be that they'd have hanging on the wall that they'd grab? But I didn't want it to be a violent thing. It was more kind of a like an army of the self, something like that. So I got shaped canvases for the shields. The tubes were these long, skinny rectangles that I made to look like. Kind of painted around the sides to make them look sort of cylindrical. And then the sculptures were the last part of that. They're kind of, I call them guardians. So they're kind of like stationary and kind of watching over everything, which sort of led me into this cemetery thing. Like, it's weird. I'm saying it as if I don't know, because I don't totally have answers for it.
Yeah.
So, which I kind of love.
Yes.
You know, you have these interests and you just kind of see how it plays out. So during the pandemic also, so I made all of those guardians, the giant sort of microphone tree shapes. And I also made one giant headstone. It's big. It's like too big, but I made it out of, that pink foam. And that was also just so strange. It was plus during that time, the level, you know, talking about putting what's going on in the world into the work. That was a very literal kind of way to do it. But I've had this idea to make these smaller headstones to just see. And then there's the keyhole. And like, what is the keyhole? Is it like unlocking like this in-between place between the living world and the other world? Like, I don't know. So yeah, that's what's going on right now. Trying to kind of answer these questions and just kind of the production of the work.
Yeah.
It's happening really fast. There's a lot of it. So as soon as I finish this stuff in this room, I'll then get it all together and really think about it and write about it and see what I can articulate.
You know? Do you write about the work?
Yeah, I have. Okay. I have to a lot for the things that I apply for, which is really good. Right, but I do for my own self too, because it, you just have to. You have to kind of, you know, hash it out. And it's neat. It's a good way to do it. Writing for submitting like actual writing. It's challenging for me. It's just such a hard process. I just respect writers so much.
I do too.
For being able to do that. I mean, it's so hard. But yeah, I do. I do write a lot.
So do you write? Because we've interviewed artists like Sally Maver does the same thing. She said it was really hard for her to articulate the work unless she wrote about it first. So do you write about it first or during the process?
During the process, okay. I actually make lists of words.
Oh.
Yeah, just lists, because it's much more, it's less intimidating. It's just like, okay, like free, just go, you know, whatever comes to mind. It doesn't have to make any sense. And in that, I kind of love it. That sort of made me think about like the poem that I was working from. I used to take the words from the poem and stack the words up. And then I actually rolled out a giant piece of paper and thought, I actually thought about making sculptures out of the words in that poem too, because you start to think of the words as a physical object. At some point. And I think of that, like the ideas of the work being embedded in the material too.
Ooh,
so it's this whole kind of like cyclical thing. But yeah, lists of words helps.
I love that.
Yeah. It went just to start out so that you don't feel like you have to come up with some smart thing to say.
Right. And I think that's such a good kind of feedback for artists that are in a funk.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just like we were talking about before, like just make a mark, just write a word, you know, just start something. I think it's kind of cool way.
Oh, I love to end on that. That was perfect.
Yeah. That was good.
Hosted by Arts Foundation's Executive Director, Julie Wake, the series is an ode to the artistic process and its unique manifestation on Cape Cod and beyond. Thanks for listening.